Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 14, Text 25. 24. Lord Shiva, the king of the ghosts, sitting on the back of his bull carrier, travels at this time, accompanied by ghosts who follow him for their welfare, responsibly. Lord Shiva, the king of the ghosts.
Lord Shiva, the king of the ghosts.
Sitting on the back of his bull carrier.
Sitting on the back of his bull carrier.
Travels at this time.
Travels at this time.
Accompanied by ghosts who follow him for their welfare.
Accompanied by ghosts who follow him for their welfare.
Lord Shiva or Rudra is the king of the ghosts. Ghostly characters worship Lord Shiva to be gradually guided toward a path of self-realization. Mayavadi philosophers are mostly worshippers of Lord Shiva, and Sripa Sankaracharya is considered to be the incarnation of Lord Shiva for preaching godlessness to the Mayavadi philosophers. Ghosts are bereft of a physical body because of their grievously sinful acts, such as suicide. The last resort of the ghostly characters in human society is to take shelter of suicide, either material or spiritual. Material suicide causes loss of the physical body, and spiritual suicide causes loss of the individual identity. Mayavadi philosophers desire to lose their individuality and merge into the impersonal spiritual Brahmajyoti existence. Lord Shiva, being very kind to the ghosts, sees that although they are condemned, they get physical bodies. He places them into the wombs of women who indulge in sexual intercourse regardless of the restrictions on time and circumstance. Kashyapa wanted to impress this fact upon Diti so that she might wait for a while. Om Agyanati Madan Nusyam Vivantanasriya Vayotakshya Avnyanam Tasma Shri Guru Venamaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Sakitam Dhinam Svayam Vipakadam Vipadam Sas Vanchak Mopatri Vischa Kripasini Vivacha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Vijayanam Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Okay, I'll try my best to speak something. So in this chapter, which is entitled Pregnancy of Diti in the Evening, we're hearing here still the request by Kashyapa in some way or the other trying to preach to his wife about the proper time and place to indulge in sexual activity if they would like good progeny. So here Lord Shiva of course is regarded as Bhutabhavana and Bhutarat. So Bhutarat, the king of the ghosts, and Bhuta Bhavana, the well-wisher of ghostly characters. So with all different types of personality with gross and subtle bodies, it is some way the mercy of the Lord that they do get elevation or they do get an opportunity to gradually make steps towards having a human form of life or having a body in which they are able to elevate their consciousness. And it is Lord Shiva's service, responsibility to handle such personalities. Understanding, of course, that Lord Shiva is not an ordinary living entity. He's not Vishnu Tattva, nor is he on the same level as us normal living entities. He's more powerful than any other living entity. Sometimes Prabhupada even says, even up to he even comes to the standard of Lord Brahma, but he's not on equal level with Vishnu. So Lord Shiva is also regarded, a few living entities are regarded as Tri Kalagya. They can see past, present, and future personalities like Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, even Narada Muni sometimes is regarded as Tri Kalagya. And it is said that Lord Shiva has three eyes, the sun, the moon, and the fire. So no one actually is out of his reach. No one can escape his vigilance. And this is nicely explained as DT later on will explain how this act that they want to perform, although not in the proper time and circumstance, will be performed in private. Therefore, no one will be able to see or witness the wrongdoings of the act. And Kashyapa Muni will later then explain that we cannot escape the vigilant eyes of Lord Shiva, which I refer to the sun, the moon, and the fire. So in this way, Lord Shiva's position at the same time is being explained, his potencies are being explained, although he doesn't possess any material properties in terms of great material opulence. He lives, of course, in a crematorium, mostly in a crematorium where dead bodies are burnt and his body is dusted with ashes, and his body dress is not so appeasing. So to the mundane eye or to the external vision, it doesn't look like such a great personality. Yet the peculiar position of Lord Shiva is that although he resides in places that are extremely tamogun, one might say, he's not stained by the material contamination. His consciousness is not stained by that rajagun or tamagun quality. And therefore, that is why he's able to be given governance, one might say, or control of the personalities who are steeped very much in this mode. And if it so happens in a situation where a woman and a man are engaging in illicit sexual activities at the wrong time and place and the wrong circumstances, then Lord Shiva, who's traveling with his companions most of the time, places a certain type of living entity into the womb because of these conditions. Kashyapa Muni also speaks in this way about Lord Shiva because he understands, of course, the position of Lord Shiva, and also that Lord Shiva is married to the younger sister of Diti. So Kashyapa Muni was seeing Lord Shiva like a younger brother. The husband of one of the sisters is called a brother in this culture. So by social relationship, Lord Shiva seems to be or happened to be the younger brother of Kashyapa because he was married to one of the sisters of Kashyapa's wife. So in this way, the discussion about Lord Shiva is going to go on for a few texts explaining his nature, the association that he keeps pertaining to his lack of Lord Shiva's dress, garlands, ornaments, etc. So in this way, later on we'll hear more about the personality of Lord Shiva. But in this text 24, we're seeing Prabhupada mentions here material suicide and spiritual suicide. So generally, of course, we understand material suicide is the end or the artificial abnormal end to what one's bodily functions by whatever means, poison, jumping in front of a tram, like we saw on Sunday. Who was it? Dollar sign thing. He got hit by a tram in the drama. So some persons do that as a means of trying to escape the harsh realities of this world, Dukkhala Yama Shashvatam. That at every step, actually in this world, there is no guarantee. We might be living in our tall skyscraper, we might be living in gated communities, but material nature has never given anyone a guarantee for comfort. Even in the most developed nations, there is no guarantee. There's so many things that go wrong every single day. So it is not a comfortable situation that one will like to be absorbed in. So materially, yes, we can try to satisfy different causes we have, causes relating to our body, causes relating to the extensions of our body, name, fame, and glory. We pursue material existence driven by these things, a desire to be, to have a certain type of name, a desire for recognition, so many different types of desires, material desires. These desires, of course, most of the time do not really lead to persons committing suicide. However, spiritually there is a suicidal attempt going on, because the more one focuses on feeds the material desires, the more the material desires grow. And of course, as we know from the Gita, material desires can never be fully satisfied. They're ever increasing. So if we focus too much on material desires, we naturally neglect our spiritual duties and the spiritual identity of our existence. So this material suicide is happening in so many different ways. We might be, as I mentioned, we might be jumping in front of a tram. You know, there's one person we've met at Urban Yoga. I will not mention names. And he actually tried committing suicide, and he jumped, I think, in front of a train. But he didn't die. For that result, he lost his legs. But he's still alive. So we might have our plans at material suicide as well, and it might not happen. We might get severely injured. I have a friend back in Botswana who did the same thing with the train, but he survived. But his face had to be readjusted. His face is totally different. Reconstructed, sorry. His face was reconstructed as it was badly, badly damaged. So material suicide happens when living entities have become frustrated and there seems not to be an avenue or a release for these frustrations. So because of the insurmountable desires and the frustration that we go through when these desires are not fulfilled, general masses of people do not know how to control these desires and the results of the desires not being fulfilled. So sometimes suicide, material suicide, looks like the easy way out. Well, one way person might even try to commit suicide could be overdosing on some drugs or some alcohol or some pills or carbon monoxide, etc., etc. And these are very, very painful and gruesome ways for one to leave their body. And all of this is done as a way to try and escape the harsh realities of material existence, not knowing how to actually live in the material world with this human form of life. So the downfall is that persons cannot deal and understand the harsh realities of material nature. As I mentioned, material nature does not give a white flag. Material nature does not give vacations. Like, I think this week, most of the kids, university is back on, everyone was on break. Material nature doesn't give you a break. There are no vacations. There are no she does not give you time off. She doesn't let you go. It's an ongoing battle. It's an ongoing reality that material nature will give us happiness, distress. It will come and go at its own accord. And Krishna has already explained in our Bhagavad Gita. So trying to go against material nature by ourselves, by our own strength as conditioned souls, is a recipe, of course, for disaster. We do not have the capacity or the strength to defeat material nature without higher spiritual knowledge. It is not possible. Hence we see around the world at this point destruction of different destruction of human civilization based on unfulfilled desires and based on uncontrolled desires. So whether it's in the Middle East or whether it's in America or Africa, wherever it is, We see the repercussions of an uncontrolled life. It's a lot of false ego coming out through our bodily designations, causing harm and exploitation. So in America last week, of course, or I think 2 weeks ago, there was another shooting where one boy just randomly rocked up and shot, nine or ten people died. And it was reported that this, of course, in the news, 12 major shootings in America had been publicized, but in total there have been 45 in a year. And people are thinking, oh, this is bad, what's happening in America? Why is this happening in America? We're such good people. Why are young people going out, taking rifles and killing other people? Sometimes for fun and sometimes to get recognition or to get attention. So they might think it is because of some external situation or for whatever reason they woke up on the wrong side of the bed. Some reason they give is that the persons who do this are mentally ill. But we of course understand the deeper meaning that, you know, the fault lies within. Sometimes as human beings, I know for myself, sometimes we like to blame someone out there. Or it's because, you know, I come from this country, it's like this, it had civil war, or my husband is like this, or my father was like this, or my mother was like this. Of course, there might be truth in all of that, but at the end of the day, we have to look inside and see what demons are lying inside and what type of disturbances are within our conditioned nature that cause us to behave in certain ways. So, of course, this is not even touched or discussed when psychiatrists and psychologists try to see why persons act out in such vengeful ways. Sometimes, however, they look at the lifestyle patterns, very rarely. They look at the lifestyle of such individuals, how much violence they're performing in terms of what they eat, what they read, and what they watch. And most times they have found that a culture or communities that come from either broken families, heavy intoxication or drug use, it happens more often that persons who come from such a background have destructive lives in the future. So rarely these topics are discussed, why there's so much material suicide. Then of course our spiritual suicide, not caring for our spiritual existence, that is the biggest, we could say the biggest regret in human society, that there's not enough emphasis on the spiritual identity of the population. Therefore, the relationships that are out there are very superficial. Relationships are based on what can you do for me? How can I benefit from being in this relationship? You know, the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita explains this very nicely about the demonic mentality. When one is after wealth, name, fame, or recognition, they're always thinking how much wealth I have today and so much more I will gain in the future. You know, you are my friend now, later on you can become my enemy so that I can gain my riches, my wealth. So this is pretty much the motto of material existence. Step on anyone's shoulder to get your success. And, you know, we're taught this from a very, very young age. Be independent, be, you know, have some guts, be very bold. Don't matter, it doesn't matter whether it's with family, friends, folk, kin, whatever you call it. Do what you have to do to survive. So these lower attributes, these lower qualities that I've also been mentioned, that are governed by Rajgun and Tamagun, allow one to slide deeper and deeper into a lower consciousness, a lower state of existence. So although we might be trapped in human-like forms, we behave not even like animals, much, much worse. If we look at the natural habitat, or where we're supposed to be living, our environment, and how much, you know, the human, so-called human advancement has destroyed that natural living environment. It is shocking. Whereas in the ocean, you see the aquatics do not destroy their own habitat. The birds don't destroy their own habitat. But the human beings, driven by greed, driven by lust, perform acts that are not only destructive for themselves, but destructive for others. So by acting in this way, the spiritual reawakening of society is put to a halt, because the material desires keep growing stronger and stronger, and they overcome one's consciousness. So we might think, yes, we might just focus on material suicide in this world and how terrible it is, how many deaths there are, but also there's a huge spiritual suicide in which the culture or the spiritual identity of who we are is lost. And that is why Krishna says, he speaks Bhagavad Gita again and again to the saintly order, those who were meant to lead by example, the Rajarishis, who were kings but saintly kings. This knowledge of Bhagavad Gita was given because there is a tendency, especially in Kali Yuga, that due to the effect of the modes, this knowledge and understanding of the Bhagavad Gita will be forgotten. Therefore, this knowledge has to be put in the forefront once again by bona fide representatives of Krishna. Not by any random person, but to get the full maximum effect, this knowledge is extremely potent when it is given or when it is repeated by one coming in the disciplic succession in parampara. That is the potency. Just like when we're in the university, we have our lecturers, we have our deans, all this knowledge is coming in their parampara. Right? They have their supervisors who have been trained by the top guy, and he's passing on his training techniques, his everything, to the younger professors so that they can also teach in their so-called specialized field, whether it's law, economics, or management, etc. So we do not want to lose our spiritual identity, because that is like suicide. Our spiritual identity connects us to our source, our root. And just like a tree will die or fall apart without having roots, we need to be connected to our root, connected to our root source. And our root, of course, it is Krishna. Everything is coming from Krishna. Hence, when Lord Brahma is glorifying Krishna in the Brahma Samhita, he begins first with the verse Ishvara Parama Krishna Sachid Ananda Vigraha Anadi Adi Govinda Sava Karana Karanam. So he begins by establishing this fact that everything is coming from Krishna. Krishna is the Sava Karana Karanam. He is the supreme Ishvara. And all others, as we have heard, are subservient or subordinate to that Ishvara. So in that way, when we get connected to our root, our source, we can regain our individuality. It is not that as soon as we develop spiritual qualities, we become one with the Supreme Conscious Being. The example Srila Prabhupada would give would be the bird flying into the tree. So from a distance, even from up close, it seems that the bird has merged into the tree, but the bird still maintains its individuality, although it's situated on the tree and it has taken on the color of the tree or whatever it may be. So similarly, when we develop our spiritual identity, we do not lose individuality. Our individuality is still there. It is our individuality that we use in serving Krishna, that dynamic personalities that we each have, we use that to serve Krishna. And that is also why Srila Prabhupada in the Chaitanya Charitamrita would explain that the Brahmavadis, those who merge into the Brahman effulgence, are only there temporarily because that is not their natural state of being. They will have to leave Brahman once again and take on forms and try to re-establish their individuality. It is not possible for the living entity to be in the Brahman eternally because that is not our natural state of being. So we have to not only educate ourselves about our spiritual identity, who we are, separate from the material body, but we also have to try to explain this to other people, to other persons that we meet, in a way, of course, that they'll be able to digest and understand. So we have different avenues we can do this with. We have different avenues we can expose the spiritual culture, whether it's through Harinam or Prasadam distribution, book distribution, Bhakti Vikshas, cultivation programs. We can use these avenues to start teaching persons about spiritual culture, in which our spiritual identity and our relationship to Krishna through service will be reawakened. So as this happens, we start getting an idea about who we are and who Krishna is, how material nature works, and who is the controller of both material and spiritual. So we gain a lot of knowledge, and that is necessary for us to keep going further and making spiritual advancement. So the difficult task that Lord Shiva has also ties into this point, that he takes these living entities who do not have gross bodies, who have performed heinous acts, sinful acts, and he gives them an opportunity by placing them in the wombs of persons who do not follow the authority of the Shastra regarding how to create progeny. So they get given an opportunity, of course, to have a body, and then what happens after that, we shall see later on in the text of Srimad Bhagavatam. But in this world, we can see what happens with when there is no Garbhadhan Sanskar. We can see what type of population we have, the quality of the population. Srila Prabhupada, in a few classes regarding Bhagavad Gita, in the first chapter, speaks about unwanted population and how it is not that the world is overpopulated, but it is the quality of the population that is a problem. The earth planet can accommodate, but it is the quality of the population that is a problem. It is Varna Shankara, it is unwanted population, because the process of conception wasn't according to at least your basic standard human civilization. Proper human beings, as explained in different parts of the Srimad Bhagavatam, follow some rules and regulations, they follow some guidelines. And this is what differentiates them between the cats and the dogs. That the human beings live a regulated life, following the guidance of Shastra, and in that way they can be in this material world and at the same time make spiritual advancement. But failure to follow the commandments, we could say, or the guidelines of Shastra, then we have unwanted population. Then we have unscrupulous men, then we have exploitation happening in society, because the quality of such persons is low by nature. So it is highly important, as we read through these purposes, to understand how there is a time and place for everything, and how there are guidelines for our behavior, even in the process of progeny, that there are stipulations given in Shastra about how to procreate in the right way for a better human civilization. So we'll hear some more about Lord Shiva's qualities and why he has this certain or this particular type of service he is doing. And later on we will see how Diti and Kashyapa Muni end their discussion regarding their progeny. I will end here and ask if there's any comments or questions.
accompanying or is the amplifier followed by the conjunctions. So to be honest, your budget time that such persons through the proper preach to such persons and they glorify.
Yeah, you can see the result. It's not really a question, it's a comment. I was talking earlier on about Vana Shankara and how because there is no Gavadhan Samskara performed, the quality of individuals in this age is very low grade or low conscious type of person. And she was saying, speaking for herself, she sees herself as having come from that. But by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya and Srila Prabhupada, we've been given the bhakti process which has elevated us to a higher platform. So by the mercy of Prabhupada and by the mercy of Gauranga and Nityananda. So Prabhupada used to say this quite a lot, that he was trying to create first-class men and women, and he was trying to create a society of brahmanas, a society of Vaishnavas. And of course, it is by our guna and karma we develop these qualities. Our birth in this material world, it is said so many times, we're all born Shudra. This is Kali Yuga. It is very, very difficult to find immense good qualities in all of us. But by the mercy of the Panchatattva, anyone can come across this bhakti process, and we're given an opportunity to perform the devotional service so easily by the mercy of the Panchatattva. So I think not only yourself, at least for myself, I wasn't a result of Gavadhan Samskara, but by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada and Panchatattva, I came across a very, very powerful, we came across a powerful process of bhakti, in which by chanting Hare Krishna, honoring Prasad, hearing the glories of Krishna, that our consciousness has changed. And we're trying to live a life that is pleasing to Krishna. So by the mercy of the Parampara, all this has happened. Thanks for your comment.
Thank you for your response.
What is the role of genetics here? If you see this, if you talk about Bhagavatam Samaskar, but I have seen the people is without Gauri Samaskar, those who have taken birth are very nice people. They have got us the father or mother characteristics, which is come from through gene. It's called the genetics. Now, is it very important to do this Gauri Samaskar, or it's more important to find this husband and wife, which are this, some good characteristics? Like, if I see some of the doctors, son and daughter, they become the doctors.
Okay.
So it is coming from the gene, it is said, from the genetics it has come.
Who said it's coming from genetics?
It's from this, the science says that, yes, the father has some characteristics, it comes to the son. So, this, therefore, this, we say that in India, normally, this, parents, they look for the best couple for the son and daughter.
Well, that might be one way you're looking at it. I have many friends whose parents are lawyers and doctors, and they have nothing to do with that. They don't have those traits. So to focus our life or to depend on material composition is very fruitless. We're not so much interested in what our janma can do for us in terms of our DNA structure. We have a certain type of body. This one can become a model, this one can become a lawyer, this one can become a scientist, whatever it may be. That is not really our focus in this life. How to climb the ranks in the material sphere. Gavadhan Samskar, it is powerful because it leaves an impression in us. It creates auspiciousness. So whether it's in this life or the next, there is immense benefit. Whereas having good DNA structure, what's that going to do for you in your next life? Is that going to protect you from Yamaraj or the Yamadutas? Not really. So our focus is spiritual development, in which our consciousness has to get cleansed. That's why the parents follow the process of Gaudiya Sansa, so that their consciousness is in the right, is elevated enough, so that they attract the right soul, and that soul will be beneficial in helping their Krishna consciousness, and eventually, hopefully, helping the Krishna consciousness of others around them. So genetics, not really that important. I mean, it's nice if you have a nice body. Okay, that's one of the, you know, piety. If you have a good, if you have a strong body, if you have beauty, if you come from a good family, if you have good education, that is there. That is a result of sampunya. But it is not a prerequisite for us to perform bhakti, or it is not really needed for us to advance in Krishna consciousness. What we focus on is the nine processes of bhakti, which have nothing to do with the material situation. So Gaudiya Sanskar is very important because we want quality individuals who will preach Krishna consciousness also and purify the environment. Happy? So don't worry if, I mean, my father had his master's this, that. I didn't necessarily go down that road, but he was a karmi. No spiritual elevation. So it doesn't really correlate.
To correlate the rules and the question, some languages they do denote like markers to do with genetics and genetic markers and stuff. Mm-hmm. One thing I noticed, well, even Prabhupada said, if we go to a holy dharma and we can just get sick, it's like a purification. And it's like saying, you know, people can talk about DNA so far, but when you get to a holy dharma, yeah, like your sickness is, you know, it's like practically magical. I don't know how to identify it, but even if you're doing the Gaudiya Sanskara and holy dharma, you bring about a, you know, a dharmavasi. You know? These are realized souls, you know, they're born non dharma. That's another thing. There's one degree of, you know, getting sick in the holy dharma you shouldn't be, and you know it. And then there's just, you know, this, you know, like this causeless mercy of.
Yeah, so there's great benefits in performing the yajna and sacrifice for Krishna. Yes, Prabhu?
It seems that in the whole scheme of things, there's more than Gaudiya Dana Sanskara, because many of us have not had, we didn't have. Mm.
Influencing. Hearing a lecture from Radhanath Swami and a similar one from Bhaktivedanta Punya Swami, where he was saying, they were being asked the same thing. Couples were saying, we have done this, but our children have nothing to do with Krishna at this point in their lives. What did we do wrong, etc.? And both Maharajas were explaining that the reason why, of course, it is suggested that Gavadan be done is to at least give them some type of head start in life, some some advantages having done that in the bigger scheme of things. However, they have their own karma with Krishna. They have their own baggage that they're bringing. And they have the main thing they were saying is their past previous experiences in different lives that they're bringing, but also the parents. It's not just that moment that they're being fixed on Krishna. They were saying it's your entire life, being Krishna conscious, and your life before that will influence what type of being will come out. So I know I have friends who didn't do Gaudiya Samskara, and they have wonderful children who have taken initiation, etc. And look, you were saying some others haven't, but they followed centra sent. So the individual's karma, the parents' karma as well, all these things come into being and they kind of mix up. It's not set in stone. Chant 50 rounds, eat Mahaprasadam on the day, and you will get a Prahlad-like child. It's not set in stone. So there's more factors that we don't see. There might, in one of the books, Leadership for an Age on Higher Consciousness, Bhakti Chetu Swami speaks about how sometimes there are beings that affect the quality of the child that you will get. So they put pressure sometimes for the parents to conceive in a certain way. And there's living entities who want to come to a certain couple. So there's so many factors that we might not see that are going to influence the outcome of the whole process. So it's not necessarily stamp 50 rounds, Maha Burfi, Maha Milk, Prahlad Maharaj, Das. It's not